The Luck of the Irish, a new play at the Huntington Theater, explores the history of ghost buying in Boston.
Ghost buying was a practice used in and around Boston in the 1950s and 60s. Back then, African American families were frequently denied the right to buy homes in all white neighborhoods. So they would recruit whites to front for them and help them buy the house.
The new play, written by Bostonian Kirsten Greenidge, explores one of the complexities of racial integration in Boston. Earlier this week, we sat down with an interracial couple who went through this when they tried to buy their first home in Brookline in the 1960s.
Joining me now in the studio are Harry and Nancy Johnson, and welcome to Radio Boston, both of you. Good to have you in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Harry, you're African-American, originally from Jefferson City, Missouri, I understand. Nancy, you're white, born and raised in South Paris, Maine. Let me ask how you both met.
We were both ushers at Marsh Chapel at BU. We were both students, and we were both ushers at Marsh Chapel.
Just for the record, it was on Sunday, January 10th, 1960. I even remember what restaurant we went to and what we had to eat.
Nancy, I understand that back then the dean of women at Boston University was so concerned about your involvement with Harry, a black man, that she personally sent letters.
She sent a letter to my parents.
What did she say?
I guess she just told them that I was dating a black man and that she wanted my parents to know that I was dating a black man, and she didn't really approve.
Mm. More to the point, she was dating a colored boy is what the letter said.
Yeah, yeah. This was 1960. Eventually, you were married in December of 1961, and a few years later, you're looking to buy your first home in Brookline, a racially mixed couple moving into what was then basically an all-white neighborhood.
They were not happy to have us.
I understand you had to get a local Methodist minister involved, right?
That's correct.
I worked with the real estate man and made an arrangement to go and look at the house and got Bill Hudson, our local minister, to go with me as though he were my husband and the two of us looked at the house.
Because, Harry, you knew that if you went along to look at the house, the deal wouldn't go through.
We had looked at a number of houses, and always the house had just been sold, or then it was in the hands of the partner who wasn't there. There was always an excuse, and always they didn't have anything else available in Brookline, but they had something in Brighton that we might like.
Mm-hmm.
So when we finally realized that this was a waste of time, we decided to use subterfuge as a way. We had dealt with the banker who gave us a loan, with the real estate broker who served his role, and with others whom we, in those days, used to call the dirty workers, the ones who policed the behavior of blacks so that those who wanted them policed didn't have to get their fingerprints on the issue.
Mm. Now, how did you see the house that you would eventually buy and live in?
Ah, well, I saw it after dark from the back seat of the car that Nancy was driving around down this little one-way street, which ironically was named White Place.
Only from the outside. He never saw the inside before we moved in.
Really? Because there just was no way to get him in at that point.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we could have gotten him in, but we wouldn't have gotten the house.
Sure, sure. So you both went to Dedham District Court with a lawyer to finalize the sale. Mm-hmm. What happened there? Because, Harry, I gather this was the first time that the sellers and everyone realized that they were selling to a mixed-race couple, right?
Yes, and the good news is they came in one at a time, the first being the banker in his requisite three-piece suit, who dropped his briefcase on the floor, spilling his papers all over the floor. The second to come in was the real estate broker, who was well-known in Brookline, and he was a cigar chewer, and he bit his cigar off and burnt his tie. And then came the people we were buying the house from, and she burst into tears, and he pounded his one fist into the other palm and use language I shouldn't use here about what he was and I.
He said something like, well, I'll be a son of a bitch?
He said, I'll be a son of a bitch. Just wasn't sure what you're comfortable with on your air.
I think we can go that far. Now, Nancy, I understand the seller that we just made reference to, even asked you if you would not buy the house, right, in that moment?
Yes.
They would prefer that we not buy the house. Were we willing to not buy it?
Yeah.
And our lawyer stepped up and said, if this doesn't go through, I'll have this tied up in court till the day you die.
Right. So after that, you finally get to see your house, Harry, that you're going to live in. How did that go?
We got to the end of the street, turned onto the street, White Place, and there were our neighbors, seven or eight of our neighbors gathered with them in stony silence. Our next-door neighbor, a woman of many years at that point, She came and showed us a petition the next morning, a long petition with a number of signatures asking us to move and saying that they would gladly buy the house from us at a small profit, and they would take care of selling it.
Did you consider that at all?
We didn't get a chance to.
Absolutely no.
But yeah, we didn't really get a chance
to. Didn't have a chance to, because Mrs. Alfuso said, "Don't worry, I'm the matriarch of this street, and I'll take care of this." And she tore the petition in half.
Oh, she tore it in half.
She tore it in half. Yeah.
You will not hear from them again, she said.
Were you ever tempted, or did you ever feel, because of how unwelcome you were made to feel, that you would sort of go back on this decision to live there, Harry?
I was angry enough, an angry young black boy, and I knew then that my life was determined not by me but by the circumstances of my upbringing. Mm. And it wasn't a possibility that I would not grow up to be a bit of royal pain.
Well, you eventually moved into another home in Brookline where you still live today. And I'm wondering, as you look back on that first experience, does it feel like a distant memory, or does it still sting in some way?
That issue itself doesn't sting. I haven't thought about it in years, actually. Mm. But there are moments, there are incidents that still occur that make one remember that the victory is not entirely accomplished.
Such as?
Well, we live near Coolidge Corner, and I see how many people of color there are behind the counters providing service. And the incident around Trayvon Martin is one of those signal moments in our history where we begin one more time the long anticipated conversation about race. And what I fear more than anything is that the conversation will dribble out for a few weeks, maybe a few months, and we'll go back to doing what we've always done.
Harry and Nancy Johnson, I want to thank you both so much for coming in, telling us your story.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
And good luck to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Now, as you heard, Harry and Nancy had to go through a process that we now call ghost buying. You can join Anthony and me tomorrow night at the Huntington Theater to see the play The Luck of the Irish, which is about just that, ghost buying in Boston. We'll be hosting a pre-show reception and then leading a Q&A with the playwright and actors after the show. There's more information at radioboston.org.
So we hope to see you there. Stay with us. Coming up, a smartphone app shows boaters where the whales are. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.